This is JFM Podcast. Beautiful morning to you there, and thank you so much for choosing J101.9 FM. You're on to the show Let's Talk. Today is the 21st day of December 2023. A good day to talk about the tight season, talk about the economic preparedness, maybe of you, of the government, and what plans the government are making to make it easeful for Nigerians. We can already tell that the Nigerians are facing tough yuletide amidst the soaring inflation rate and naira scarcity. It's a tough time for the country. And I don't know if it's going to be a Merry Christmas or it's just going to be Christmas. But welcome to the show. My name is Abigail Seaman, and I'm not alone. I'm joined by Gilbert Joseph. Gilbert, good morning to you.
Good morning, Abigail. Good morning to our listener. And happy Christmas in advance. I think we're already in the season, and it's quite interesting how the outlook of the preparations are already in society and all, you know, that we're seeing so far. But a big question there, whether it will be a Merry Christmas or one of those Christmas celebrations for people. And by and large, Christmas is meant to be merry, regardless of the situation. People just have to lift themselves up and celebrate Christmas with all of the cheer that greets the birth of Jesus Christ for the Christian faithful. That's really important. But you spoke about the naira scarcity and how it's biting hard on citizens. Tough one, because it's real. We're back to the Emefi ladies. Who do we blame? Who do we hold accountable? You know, who do we ask to tell us all of the answers that we're seeking regarding the scarcity of naira and all of that? So what authorities are saying is because of the hoarding of the currency by Nigerians. So I begin to wonder, to what end, for what purposes are people holding currency or trying to just hoard them as it were? It's not, for crying out loud, something that looks like the PMS scarcity period where people will just buy to inflate the prices later and make outrageous profits. So why would people go into that? Is that an adventure? I don't know if hoarding the currency is an adventure, but it's certainly not something to do, and we have to help one another. Definitely. Christmas is here, and that's the essence of the season.
Actually, that's the essence of the season. And when you're talking about naira scarcity, I remember one of the headlines, I think last week, where CBN was saying there are about over 3-point-something trillion naira in circulation. But we're still seeing that cash is really hard to come by this day. And I'm glad that they also brought out a memo saying even the old naira notes are still legal tenders. And the deadline was December 31st, but according to the CBN, it has been extended. They have not given a specific date when those old notes will no longer be legal tenders. And one of the stories we saw this morning tied to the yuletide was Tinubu approving 50% cut in cost of interstate transportation on luxury buses. As much as we want to say, well, that is beautiful, but at the same time, I saw a tweet this morning, quite funny, and the person was saying, can I take this news and go to the transport service I'm going to use to travel and tell them this is what the president said, and it will be effective. And when we read that story this morning, one of the things that came to my mind was one of the promises that the government made when the NLC were about to go on strike with the 15-point MOU they signed, and saying the CNG buses, and we haven't seen them up to today. And would this also take effect? Would this be implemented? Will we see the slash in prices from just Abuja, if you're using the state transport services, I think it's about 6,000 naira. Would there be a slash for that price when people want to travel? A lot of questions right here, and we're hoping that the government will actually implement this. It will not just be something that we would read, and when we get to the parks, motor parks, it will still be the same thing. I don't know what your thoughts are.
Yeah, quite interesting. But for the NLC, I think they're also overwhelmed. And you wouldn't blame them because the government has made numerous promises to the NLC that it hasn't even kept at least 5% of that, as far as I do know, because even the 30%, you know, what do I call it, incentive?
Yes.
As a result of the fuel subsidy removal, was only paid to certain people once, according to the report that we had at our disposal at some point. So it's tough for these people to call government to account, because for me, the problem is even in the part of government. Mm. Why make promises you aren't going to fulfill? Mm-hmm. Do you get? So they're now coming here, despite a scarcity of evidence to suggest that they have kept to the other parts of the promises they met, coming out again to say, look, we're slashing transportation fares, interstate transport services actually, across 22 states by 50%. Now, to what intent and purposes? And they're saying this will commence from today. Today is Thursday.
All right.
Do you get?
Yes.
I don't know the quick fix magic the government will, you know, try to put in place to ensure that Nigerians are able to travel seamlessly. And to just be, for example, if you're heading from Plateau State to, for example, Yobe State, and if your transport fare will be 5,000 naira, you can rest assured that you're paying only 2,500 naira.
Yes.
This is just an example. Mm. Would that be the case right now?
Do you get?
So it's really tough. And don't come out to say things that you know you can't be able to fulfill. I think that's the bottom line. And government has to just be seen to practically stimulate people's economic situations, or to even intervene swiftly by putting practical measures in place. For example, in Plateau State, you can tell that there are certain government interventions that I don't think they made so much noise about it, but they ended up coming out to put in place those interventions. These are visible. You can always see them. And one thing with facts is they're sacred. They don't lie. They stare you in the eyes, and well, you have to just admit it, regardless of who or whomever is coming from. So that is what we want to see in the part of federal government, to make Christmas seamless for Nigerians, to make the holiday season seamless for people. You just wonder how many people can travel to their homes to reunite, to reconnect with their family members because of the tough times that we're in the country. And I think that's quite unfortunate.
It's really unfortunate. And as you were talking, I was just thinking, We've seen people who have been in government for donkey years, people who have served as one-time minister, one-time governor, one-time House of Rep member, and whatever position that they've been able to attain. And one of the things that we still see that has been replicated over the years is that we have government come up with promises or policies and they never get implemented. I want to believe that implementation has to be one of our biggest problems in this country. And if there would be a seminar for these public office holders just to go and learn how to implement things, because it shows that I know that for example, when people make New Year resolutions, you hear people say, I want to be able to match words with actions. I want to be able to, when I say something, be able to execute it to the very end. Well, we have political leaders or local government chairmen, whoever they are, and you know what, they just say these things and it's applaudable. We clap, oh, this is nice. But at the end of the day, we don't ask questions about, when are you going to do this? How are you going to do this? When should we see these things happening? For them, not even for the people asking them, for them, when they make such suggestions, do they critically think about it? Do they critically say, this is how I want to get it done? This is when it should be done? And what are the things I'm going to put in place to be able to get this thing done? That is what we call, just even for a normal human being, we call that personal development. You trying to build yourself. And I'm just wondering why we have political leaders who do not go all the whole nine yards when it comes to making promises for people. You're dealing with people here. You're not just dealing with yourself. You're dealing with the whole country. You're dealing with your constituency. You're dealing with your local government. And you do not take it into cognizance that I should be strategic with my planning, or I should be strategic with my thinking. It's more or less like a slap on the face that we're in 2023 and we still have a major problem of implementation, that we are the giant of Africa and we can't seem to put our heads together to say, this is how we want to get it done. We just sit down, we set up 10-man committee, 7-man committee. We're very good at setting up committees, but we are never good at setting up committees that would implement these things. We talk about the problems, but we never get to implement solutions, which is just very sad. And it's quite heartbreaking that I'm scared that even generations after my own will still be talking about the same problem, even in years to come. And I'm hoping that maybe very optimistic right now that I'm hoping that we get to have leaders. After this one, we're not going to be recycling people anymore. And we're going to have leaders who have the people at heart, who are not just thinking about 50% slashing. And they're thinking about, okay, after we do this, what's next? After you ease off transportation, what will be the next plan? We have the case of the palliative that we still have not seen it. Permit me to tap my hands against my other hand. We have not seen it. I don't know if there's any report out there that people have gotten it. And if there are, maybe we've just been blinded. I've not seen it or it has been done secretly. Let us know, because every day I'm looking who has gotten this palliative and nobody has said it. Who has gotten the 25% or 30% increment in salary? Who are the poorest of the poor that have gotten the how much? I think it's 35,000 naira. Who are they? And we are 4 days to Christmas, and we cannot say that we're enjoying what the Yuletide season, or we can see what the Yuletide season is all about. Remember years ago when you say Yuletide season, people are excited. The street,
you can see it.
The
you
street
can
is
feel
bubbly.
It.
You can feel
also
it.
Smell it.
Yes, you can.
Because for example, in just a few days to Christmas, people have to fry things. People have
Thank
to slaughter
you.
Things. You see these things. You go to the market. Everywhere is bubbling.
Mm-hmm.
Marketers. And I was told this story by a friend yesterday, by the way, about how she went to purchase something in the market. And her regular customer told her that, look, don't even try it. Mm-hmm. If you don't have the money, don't do it. This is someone who is in the market herself to sell, you know, to transact and make profit.
Mm.
But confessing that, look, things have just gone beyond what you can ordinarily think of. So it's tough. It's really a tough time. And while you were speaking, I just remembered what a scholar said, that whoever coined the phraseology that there's a headquarters of shop talk anywhere or everywhere, he had Nigeria certainly in mind.
Definitely.
We're good with the talks. We're good with the workshop, with the conferences, with the seminars, you know. But when it comes to putting in practical measures, politicians just take interest at political correctness in terms of decision making and implementation. And even at that, how many people get to enjoy that?
True.
Do you get? Now, for example, the things that they are meant to attain, why do you have 6 months or even fewer months to election year or to election seasons? You see politicians come up with laudable ideas, laudable projects. You begin to wonder, so all along you could do this.
You could do this.
And you didn't do it, you know, because you just know Nigerians suffer a relapse in terms of memories, in terms of accountability and all of the necessary checks. You think you can just come to display this before them and then you get away with it and win the next election. So these are the priorities for our politicians. And time again, our consciousness aren't really enough reawakened to keep these people in check, to put them accountable. Perhaps even if we do, how much do our institutions support the accountability mechanisms that civil society organizations, that individuals whose voices are loud and always clear can even think about, you know, reaping the benefits for their efforts? So how much do we do in terms of getting things correctly? For example, nobody saw, you know, Dele Alake coming up with this statement after the meeting they had at the State House regarding this. But they came up with it anyway.
Yes.
So what do you have to say? Do you get? So if you don't see it, besides, you didn't expect it, say, for example, last week, you just have to deal with it and find solutions to your problems, especially in the Christmas season. But I think it's quite unfortunate.
It's really unfortunate. Our politicians are giving us the savior complex. They are here to save the world. And the fellow citizens of Nigeria to say, oh, yes, forgive me of my sins and wash me clean again. Well, you can be a part of the conversation. We're opening the phone lines for you this morning. We want to hear you. What stories are you following? And with the Christmas season already here, tell us how you're going about your expenditure in today's economy in Nigeria. The numbers to call 08121877777 or 09055666699. Head on to our social media platform too. It's www.facebook.com/JFMJoss and off X at JFMJoss. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Lady Abigail and Mr. Gilbert.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the show. What's your name and where you're calling us from?
This is Pastor Henry J.J. Dere, known as Young T of Doncaster.
All right, Pastor Henry, go ahead.
Well, you have spoken well. You know, one thing that we are having in Nigeria with our political elite, not that they doesn't know what to do to put Nigeria in
Okay, I'm sure the network right there. Do make sure you call us back. 0812-18-777-77 or 090-556-6699. Hello, good morning. All right, do well to call back. It's still 0812-18-777-77 or 090-556-6699. Or head on to our social media platforms and be a part of the conversation. Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning, Abigail. It's Radio Mama and Bruno calling from right here.
Good morning,
Good
Radio
morning
Mama.
To whoever you are with there. Just ending. Weak institutions is responsible for non-implementation of policies in Nigeria. This is further compounded with a docile populace, so the government has taken our facility for granted. Let me tell you something, Abigail. If you bring Joe Biden, U.S. President, and Sunak, British Prime Minister, they will do exactly what Tinubu is doing now. Now, as for the transport, you're talking about 50% discount. I found it laughable. It is not implementable. Take what I'm telling you to the bank, and it's going to give room for corruption. I thought, can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. Go ahead.
I thought what Tinubu should have done is to flood the whole system with government buses, the one they promised. Remember, they made the promise.
Yes, they did.
They have not even given us one bus. I would have been happier if the announcement says that the federal government has not secured their buses, that they are giving a minimum of 20 buses to each state to commence this transportation between down and the port, you know. That would have made sense, and it's easy to monitor it. But this one now, even the transporters themselves, they are still coming down to say that they are not even aware of it, you know. So it's ridiculous. So those of you are journalists, send the reporters on ground to go and see what is happening from today on. It will not work, you know. Then a government that is serious, look at that refinery. That is that if they are really serious and give me sufficient crude, what you produce is more than what four refineries will produce, even if it was working in a day. But that's now. He cannot. He's 6 million, and they are giving only 1 million. And you say it's a responsible government. I don't blame them. We are the problem. What is it? You're talking about implementation. They know what to do, but they don't want to do it because the system has permitted them not to do it. We are the ones permitting it. So if the Labour Congress is even worse off, they are there just for their own interest, except the idea they wanted to kill. He's the one I can vouch for, if you ask me.
All right.
So let's argue for Nigeria.
Thank you so much, Radio Mama, for your contribution this morning. Yes. Empty promises, if you ask me, actually, if you do. I hope that that 50%. Somebody doesn't go to the bus back today and they're adding an extra 2,000 on the fare.
You know what?
It will be crazy.
If they had said, look, we're taking off 35% and it was going to work, I think it will be better rather than say 50%.
And
do you get?
How many of the drivers at the motor park are aware of this information? Because you might go there and they'll tell you, am I Tinubu? It's not me. This is how much you have
was
to pay.
Was there a prior meeting between them and the transport company?
Yes, NURTW. Yes, that's
so,
something.
Well, it's about the money. If they're able to wire the monies into these transport companies' account, then rest assured. Even if they do, do they have personnel on ground to monitor these things?
Another question.
Do you get
another question? Another issue to look at there. Hello. Good morning.
Hello, Abigail. Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to the show. What's your name and where you're calling us from?
Yeah, I'm Victorious from Johnson.
All right, Victorious, go ahead.
So, yeah, I'm enjoying your program very well. So what amused me was the young man out there is proposing to you and you're just taking chances. he's offering you something. You know, he loves you. That's why he's proposing to you. And meanwhile, that's bygone. I'm just joking.
All right.
About this country, you know, we shouldn't take our government serious in anything they say. So just all man for himself. Have a nice day.
Thank you. Well, it's very sad that we're at the point where people are giving advice not to take the country serious. And we should be taking our country serious. We live in this country.
But you know the thing is this. You've got to also protect your mental health.
True.
Really important. If you take things too seriously, if you take things to heart, you just might give yourself needless medical conditions.
Mm.
And I think that is the perspective from which people who say, don't take, you know, government pronouncements seriously. Because, listen, you've got so much to deal with. You've got the kids thinking about them resuming school.
True.
You've got medical bills to pay. Just the problems are all over. And they've got to eat, water to purchase, light bill. These things are all over you. So if you decide to look, allow them get at you. Your family might even...
It's a sad one, to be honest, Gilbert. It is a sad one that sometimes, even myself personally, I just, you know what, shut out the news. Because sometimes when you watch it, it's more disheartening that it is something of joy. You think about it and it's always problems upon problems upon problems. Even when you hear the government bring out good plans, you start to question, are these people serious?
But they have done this before.
Can they do this... I remember when they started the floating of the Naira, I said, this happened in the time of Buhari. Yeah. What did it fix? And you're doing it again. What is it going to fix? Like all those questions beckoning for answers right here. Still the numbers to call 08121877777 or 09055666699. Hello, good morning. All right, do well to call us back. Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning, Abigail and Gilbert.
Good morning. Welcome to the show. What's your name and where are you calling us from?
Thank you very much. My name is Wasby Steven. I'm calling you from Oshi.
All right, go ahead.
I think it's a novel initiative. It's a very commendable one. But I think there are some lacuna here and there that needs to be, the I's needed to be crossed. I mean, to be dotted and the T's crossed. However, I still feel that state governors should play complementary roles. It shouldn't be left to the federal government alone. Mm-hmm. What is the job of the state governors? Governance is not just shouldn't be left to the federal government alone. Why do we have the state governors and the local government chairmen? They need to come in now to subsidize, because not only everything that the federal government should do. However, there's a trust deficit between the citizenry and the government.
Mm.
That is why this when they roll out initiatives like this, we don't trust, because they are failed as in time past. But I want to give it to this government. Even I wouldn't say they are doing much, but they are trying compared to the administration before this. When it was Buhari's time, when you hear things like we should remove the service fees, you would perceive he didn't even know anything that was going on. But this man, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt that he listens.
Mm.
Let's pay more for them and then put them on their tools to do more.
No.
But I still feel the state government, which is closer to the people, should even complement by rolling out some of their own policies too to complement the effort of the federal government. Thank you very much and have a nice day.
Thank you so much for your contribution. Mm, that's quite insightful.
Well, yeah, quite insightful. But you see, when you say, what was the first point you made?
He said the trust deficit.
The trust deficit was the last thing that
he also said. Mentioned. Okay, the state government yes, also buying into.
Yes. But we practice a federal system of government wherein the power at the center is just too much.
Mm.
And this is a conversation that brings about, you know, the question of restructuring.
True.
Once again. So if you don't allow for, you know, governments, subnational governments to deal with certain problems at their level, you don't empower them. You just want people to say, look, I'm the strongest. Come to me. You expect for these sort of pronouncements to come forth. So that is the major challenge.
Mm.
While it's true that state governments can take responsibility and should take responsibility, the federal government has to acknowledge that enough of over-dependence on the power at the center.
Mm.
You know, that would help to even lessen the job for you. So what you basically have to do is to support where there are overwhelming challenges for the states. And when you see them put mechanisms in place, you can say, all right, we're supporting you to do this and to get to this level. That's what's really important. Fantastic idea there. But the structure of our federalism is just something that I think is too bogus.
Yeah, I think we need to have a reform right there. We need to also be able to break down some of these things. There's so much power at the center. There's so much. So you have states and even local governments depending on the center. I remember a lot the fight for local government autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, some states is still something that is still they're at the table of the House of Reps and they're still contending with that, if they should give local government autonomy. And I, of my own opinion, I think they should, so that you have ease, okay? Not everything boils down to the federal government at the end of the day. You have state governors being able to also fend for their own state. You have local government chairmen being able to also fend for their local government too. So I believe that, as you said, there should be restructuring, there should be a reform in our type of governance. A lot of comments on Facebook right here. Don't forget, it's still www.facebook.com/JFM Jaws of X @JFM Jaws. Be a part of the conversation this morning.
On Facebook, Ayodele Agbabiaka is saying, this transportation slash by 50% needs to be practical and it should be beyond the festive season. What about food? Can they slash food to by 100%? Albert Akaya Dagza says, I have a serious concern about the government, especially the federal government, who are more about palliating our lives as Nigerians than fixing the system that will make for a viable and improved standard of living for us. It's sad and indeed scary. Good morning. Comrade Longat says, mine is a call to the security agency in the seasons of Christmas celebration. Please, they should protect life and property, also ensure peace during and after the Christmas. To my Christian brothers and sisters, it's a season of sharing with your loved ones. Share with your neighbors and everyone around. Julius Achiga says, for me, I will only buy the necessary things and forget the rest. President Tinubu doesn't know what he is doing. How can he reduce transport fare by 50% while fuel is very expensive? This administration lacks what it takes to lead Nigeria well. Aminu Abdullahi Ishaibu says, well, we thank God at any situation we find ourselves, but actually the economic situation is very hard to the masses of Nigeria. Junior Raymond says, have actually missed this program. God bless JFM. Izank Istifanu says, we pray for peaceful celebrations ahead. The economy is too harsh. We should manage what we have. January is still ahead. Thank you. Gobat Thank God Senior says, we pray for God's faithfulness upon our lives throughout this season and grant us all our heart desires. Dimas Bala is saying, I don't understand when Mr. President says federal government has slashed the transport fare by 50%. The question is, on whose vehicle has federal government settled the commercial bus drivers before making such announcement? Or does federal government have their own business to be conveying people? I found it laughable, honestly. In fact, it's a joke. Asobagun Francis says, having appreciated God Almighty for being alive from January to December and the Christmas celebration should be celebrated according to what you budgeted for, minus school fees and the political statements from the federal government on 50% cut on transportation is a blanket statement to Nigerians. Olarewaju Berry says, so much is going on in Nigeria. The leaders in Nigeria are not feeling our pain. They are always about the next election. This Christmas, it's really hard out here to break even in business, and prices of goods and services can't be afforded by the poor masses with low income. I'm not expecting any rice this Christmas. I believe once I have Gary, I will be okay. You would have rice. Chairman Emmanuel Ushie says, yesterday the president made a pronouncement that transportation fares should be slashed by 50%. Today I was at the park. 1,000 naira was added to the normal T fare. My question is, when will the government of Ashu Ajibola Ahmed Tinubu match words with action? FJ Dabson says, everywhere Taito, no money to spend, high cost of items, just managing the little in possession. Kefas Dayit says, it's really difficult doing chin-chin this Christmas. Last, now koskoro we go do so, because all the kurus for mouth, trust Nigerians, we will surely come up with something to cushion the hardship.
Definitely. Nigerians always know how to make, well, I think that's one thing I really, really respect with Nigerians, that no matter the situation, we always know how to make something out of nothing.
Absolutely.
And we always know how to make ourselves happy regardless of what the situation is. It's just more or less like a survival instinct for us. As much as, well, we should be complaining, but at the same time, you can't come and kill yourself.
You can't come and go and kill yourself.
And die in the process, anyway. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you for being a part of this segment of Let's Talk. Let's Talk still continues with Voices of Peace. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back. Welcome back to the show. If you are just joining us, this is J101.9 FM and you're on to the segment Voices of Peace, brought to you by International Alert Nigeria in partnership with Clean Foundation and funding support from Open Society. Don't forget that International Alert Nigeria is motivated by the belief that peace is within our power. And you can join the conversation on all alert platforms for updates using the hashtag #IAlertNigeria. And today on the show, we will be looking at civil-military cooperation, I beg your pardon, strengthening security governance. Well, that is a very, very fundamental topic right there, because most of the time, or oftentimes, we see a clash between civilians and military. Military who are deployed to conflict zone areas get there and you see what we might want to describe as a rift between the military personnel and that of civilians, because of the fact that, as we said, there is a trust deficit most of the times. And I remember on the show we had spoken extensively about security reforms too, and what our security personnel need to know when they're heading on to this conflict zone areas. As much as, yes, you are there to salvage the situation too, you also have to put into cognizance the mental and physical well-being of the civilians too. You also have to put into cognizance how well you you defend them, because it might either go right or it can go south completely, where you have civilians fighting with even the military and you get them saying, you know what, we will take matters into our own hands, we don't even want you involved in it. Well, welcome to the show. My name is Abigail Simon.
Yeah, Gilbert Joseph is my name, and welcome to the show as well. You have spoken, I think, virtually on the meat of some of the matters we would be looking at, and that summarizes CIMIC, or civil military cooperation, as it's referred to oftentimes. And it's basically a confluence of two separate actors in the events of conflicts and all, because you're talking about civilians and, of course, you're talking about the military. So military, the impression that Nigerians had 5 years ago, 10 years ago about the military was, when you see these guys, something must be amiss, because their sole responsibility is to defend the territorial integrity of Nigeria, of the country at large, regardless of where the borders are, by land, sea or air. So it's about them coming together to work hand in hand and find even peaceful resolutions of conflicts. And civilians in that context could be non-governmental organizations, they could be civil society actors, and they could even be the citizens themselves. So how do they galvanize each other and work together to provide solutions to some of the problems? But practically speaking, in Plateau State, in recent times, I think sometime this year, I remember also there was a protest around the Maraban Jama'a area, wherein a military incident took place. But thankfully, you commend the military in the way and manner they have restored the robust relationship that's expected of them and the civilians in Plateau State, especially when it has to be with corporate social responsibilities and all of that. They have, at least I've seen in a village here called Jong, they did a massive rebuilding of the community that was brought down to ruins. You could see ashes, you could see houses burned together, and you just begin to imagine. But the military, in partnership with the civilians there, were able to come together and build. And I think a politician was also involved in that, Idi Giang, yes, in that development. So it was quite instrumental, quite helpful. And this is where you expect to see two different actors, but coming together to achieve a common goal with no clashes, because, of course, these clashes are bound to exist. So it's about you trying to spot them and fix them as early enough as possible.
As you mentioned, fixing them as early as possible. I remember back then when Jos or the state of Plateau used to be really hot back then, you find out that when people, as you said, see the presence of military, yes, something is about to happen. But at the same time, you notice that when you sense the military presence, there's a certain level of fear.
I was going to say calm, really, but fear.
Because, sometimes you see them and you're really scared. And
what's happening again?
Just what happened again. And most of the time, you find out that they're not even approachable. I remember when I was growing up, at every junction, you see a military like checkpoint or a military stand. And I remember then I used to be really scared because one time, well, I wouldn't talk about it on air, but one time I used to be really scared. I feared the military personnel a lot.
Not only you, there are people who, the Masu machine, the, in quotes,
yes,
the Masu machine, when you see them, I mean, people just camper. But it means that, so those are the kinds of things that, you know, people should try to, the military and civilians should try to just dispel of. Look, tell yourselves we are partners in progress.
Thank you.
We are partners in the development of society and the stability of society. That's that. Sorry, I had to just cut in.
No, it's not a problem. There. Yes, it's the fact that what we have seen being the major problem between the civilians and that of the military has to be the lack of understanding, has to be the lack of effective communication. There's always miscommunication. There's always a misinterpretation of actions right there. You see that probably the person, the military personnel, means well, but you past trauma too can also play be a factor there, where the civilian doesn't really trust. Something happened years ago and they're scared that it might happen again. And I also think that even when it comes to orientation, civilians should also be orientated that this military personnel, be it from the Air Force, be it from the Army, be it from wherever, are working together to ensure that peace is attainable. I'm making sure they're working together to be sure that you get the required peace and stability that you need. And I think that one of the solutions right there is making sure there's effective communication. That's why we see things like Joint Task Force.
True.
The Joint Task Force is not just because somebody just woke up and said we want to do a Joint Task Force, but Joint Task Force is that we bring everyone from different military parastatals together to be able to function, to be able to
achieve
to achieve the common goal, which is bringing peace to a community. And I think that when we get to see more of that, we would tend to see the collaboration between civilians and military. It will no longer be a love-hate relationship. It will no longer be a I'm scared relationship. It will be a relationship of let's get this thing fixed, let's restore peace to our community.
Absolutely. And the place of competition is entirely, or should entirely be, non-existent.
There
shouldn't be any points between two actors who should cooperate ordinarily, then competing for space or competing for resources or competing for even influence.
Yeah.
Because, of course, you know, there are interventions carried out by different civilian organizations in conflict zones. And there's that tendency that, look, I want to do this. Why are you doing this? You know, so that should also be taken into account and cognizance in order to avoid further degenerating, you know, situations that ordinarily should be arrested by actors. And one thing is the support of government in nation states. Really important, because when you talk about civilians, of course, you're talking about democratic governance. And who are Democrats? They are civil people.
Yes.
Like they will say in Hausa, Babariga, or Mulkin Ferinhula, and all of those things. So it means that it's a symbol of democratic rule or democracy, as it were. And people just have to, Democrats or government in civilian territories have to support the military, allow for them to also work, and make them understand that, look, they're entitled to protecting the civilians and protecting society and all of the infrastructure that institutions benefit from in order to foster unity, in order to foster coexistence. And this is the way to go for both civilians and military personnel in CIMIC.
And I agree with you on that one. And I also think that one of the ways to be able to bridge a gap between the civilians and military personnel is making sure that even the civilians are involved in decision making too, that they are also seated on that table where you have every military personnel being there. They also have a right to make decisions too, because it's their community that has been affected. And the only way you can do that is making them be a part of it, that when you call for seminars, when you call for peace building or peacekeeping seminars, the civilians, as you mentioned, even civil societies, however it may be, religious leaders, people who are stakeholders when it comes to peace building, be a part of the decision making. It helps to bridge that gap. You get to see that, yes, there's more cooperation between civilians and military personnel, when you bridge that gap by making sure that, okay, yes, we are the people who can hold the guns and defend you, but we want to also hear from you too. What do you think? How do you want our approach to be like? Do you want us to come like a thief in the night, or do you want us to come early hours of the morning? Because I remember when we're talking about early response to and I remember when a few callers called and said it's after the crime has been done, then you see them coming. Yes, and it's really, it just makes civilians not trust the military again, or trust even generally security institutions again. Because why would you come after the deed has been done? So I want to believe that when you have everyone, stakeholders on the table talking about it, you know what approach. Because the way you'd approach one community might not be the same way you approach another community. You have to understand the peculiarities of such communities before you head on there. And I'm hoping that, as time goes on, that all that we are saying here, they're put into...
would come to life.
Yeah, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. And information sharing, I think basically that's what you've also spoken about. Mm. Communication is key. And how do you get information? It's a two-way thing. It can be a way. It's like the dance, tango.
Yeah.
You can't do it alone.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to rely on the other person. And that is why in war studies, I've read a book where, you know, they were talking about human intelligence extensively.
Yeah.
You know, you can even win over people from the enemy's side if you're good enough with your strategies, and that is heavily reliant on the role of the military. So if you don't permit for that to happen, it means that you can't achieve the necessary results that you're expected to achieve. And by and large, the essence of military personnel is to return the peace, is to keep the peace,
mm-hmm.
and to provide order, after which their job is done. For example, if you're talking about the military in civilian society, so for example, if you have the army come into a system, once they are done with that, they can leave and allow for the police and other paramilitary bodies,
yes,
to take over, yeah, you know, and continue with all of the necessary engagements that they're supposed to. So once you're able to have a robust information sharing and communication template, it will even mean that the military personnel will leave civilian territories earlier than expected, perhaps in their calendar of operation. And that's what really key component,
yeah,
of this discussion.
Actually, makes the communication, because most of the time what we see the problem at is the miscommunication there. And I also want to believe that if we have a legislation on policy enhancement where we have reforms to, this would also help. Where we see that even there's an integration of civilian and military efforts, and they will upholding human rights and democratic principles, I think that would be good. Because most of the time when we see, permit me to say like this, when we see military presence, we're thinking of the single girls that will become pregnant before they leave. And it's just really, it's just one thing that I'm not even going to say, let's not talk about that. But we know that is what happens. That's what we see happening. Sometimes we see that some of this security personnel tend to take, it's almost like taking spoil out of the war, yes, and going home with it. We see that
free booters,
yes, yes, we see
we have to cut our military personnel in slack.
So slack.
I understood two years back that the life of a military personnel revolves around 3 W's. That's wine, women, and wars. Do you get?
So yeah, that's really true.
That's an enlightenment.
An enlightenment.
But people who are even fortunate end up marrying military personnel.
Actually.
Because there's this attachment, this prestige that comes with
the uniform.
So perhaps that is something that it's a benefit in itself. I don't know.
But I want to believe that they should place focus where focus is due. And yeah, you can be a part of the conversation. Let us know, what do you think are the strategies to help build or also help enhance the cooperation between civil and military? On the show this morning, 08121877777 or 09055666699. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning. All right, do well to call us back. Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the show. What's your name and where you're calling us from?
That's good. Comrade Bernard on the line. Leaders, I greet you. Thank you very much.
Yes, Comrade Bernard, go ahead.
Everything has modus operandi. That is a military language. So that's the due process. You have to follow the way it's formed. Like the Air Force, like the Army, like the Navy. They have to work in synergy. so that they can get it. You know who won by this government? It's not the Air Force. Military aviation, and which they're supposed to be sold. What can't we have to connect technology? If you look at what's happening in Hamas, or even Iraq, when we had this situation, every division of the military took its own time. They are combing the ground, combing like what we are telling the military to do in San Vista, to do in Yogi, to do in other areas. But the question is that our military, the government wants the citizens to disappear because they have what it takes. When they return military, we have to start this. What people are going to Caribbean, go to Australia, go to UK to acquire military training. And if Nigerian soldiers or police go to this, they come back with lawyers. That's the jewel or what they call it, fight for performing well. So why are not Nigeria here? Boko Haram, this is the happy opening guy. Are we running military or civilian? That's the question. Just because no authority, no political will to mandate people to do the right thing. Okay, look at what you have. When you call it to Germany, you are calling or coming to America. Is that their professionalism? Where the military mind before, when you hear military, just because the government was serious. We were not serious in anything. We politicize this. Okay, look at the defense minister. Somebody who was playing Boko Haram is government. That's Bello Matawala. Okay, look at Abdullahi Kadem or this. Who was there when he was there? When Boko Haram took and took Lea Sherif. They're not commanding our district. Okay, look at even A-Rufai. No, not A-Rufai. This new Hurumari, was he a professional soldier? He was a military. He was a policeman. He doesn't know the technicality of the military. All of them, they are just incompetent. So, here's as much as we can share our policies and bring governance. We cannot get it around. Good morning.
Thank you so much, Comrade Bernard, for your contribution this morning. Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Please, can you turn down the volume of your radio set or move away from it, please?
Done exactly.
Thank you so much.
Extravagant Malu be calling from Jos. I have to call because this is one topic that is so dear to my heart. And I'd like to make the following submission. Number one, when you're talking about civilian-military relationship, it has become very, very imperative and incumbent on us to look into it severely, because we have neglected the police over the years, and now we have the military doing the job of the police, and it will not have an end until we decide to do something about it. Because one, the police are trained for internal security, while the soldiers are trained to protect our borders and all that. But now they have come into our system, and it has its own disadvantages. Number one, the military, in their posting of their personnel, may mean well, but what about the activities of those personnel? Who checks them? Is there a table to report back, or for the civilians to report the excesses of this personnel? Now, if you are traveling on our highway, for instance, before, who born you to offer a military man a bribe under the former head of state, Diabo and Buhari? They will literally ask you to chew that note. But today, what we see on our highway, you see military personnel deliberately with impunity collecting money from motorists without minding the occupants of that vehicle. And when you refuse to cooperate, they pack you as long as they care. And number two, you find a situation where military in their personnel, in their operation, dives into mundane issues. For instance, there was an issue that happened around the Tida Junction, was it last year or last 2 years, where a lady had an issue with a young man, and she went back and brought her military boyfriend, who brought other military personnel, and it led to the death of that young man. Also, I had an experience 2 years ago where I was trying to find a space to park in Amadu Bello, and the guy in Austin, everybody was a military man, was also trying to chance me to park in that space. And then our bumpers of our vehicle rushed. And he quickly came down and asked me to kneel down. I said, for what? Who kneel down for what? And before he knew what was happening, he had to place a call and look at a truckload of other military men trying to molest me and try to dehumanize me. Thank God I was a retired general. I never knew he was a military man who saw what happened. Came back and in anger, you know, dismissed them and told them off and had to reprimand them in his own way. And God saved me. If not, you can imagine.
Yeah.
And lastly, let me also, during the COVID-19 or during one of the curfews, we heard of a lady, the medical personnel, even with her ID card, when she was on essential duty.
Yes.
So they went to the point of throwing her in the gutter. And so when we are talking about military-civilian relationship, some of these excesses of the military personnel, if they are not looked into, I don't think we are making any headway. And sometimes even when you report, you see a concerted effort to shield those personnel. So the question is, who builds the cap and where do we go from here?
Yeah.
God bless you once more. Reverend Malubi from Jos.
Thank you so much for your contribution right there. Yes, it's sometimes it's the abuse of power we see sometimes with military personnel.
Impunity,
yes. And I know that, as they said, they have the modus operandi or how they are supposed to operate, but sometimes you, as much as you are dealing with military personnel, don't forget that the person wearing that uniform is also a human being too, and you never can tell what and let me be a devil's advocate for the military, you never can tell what they are going through personally.
But that's why they are trained.
Yeah, but they are trained. Sometimes you know, human emotions get in the way. Sometimes human emotions forgets training, and you know, just it's all up in the way. You have sometimes you see some what you might want to describe as some rascal behaviors coming from the military. I know that when you have checkpoints, you have people, you see people. I remember a friend of mine who was traveling one time, and they were asked to come down from the car, and this military man started to cut his hair with scissors. And you might want to ask, what's the reason? Why are you doing that? That is my choice of my hairstyle. That's what I decided to look like. So why have a problem with it? And you just
against indiscipline.
Is that is that what it is? Well, yeah, the solution, as we have mentioned, to be able to create this cooperativeness, or permit me to use it that way, with the civilians and military, is that we have to get them to be come together and be on the table, make sure that communication is actually really, really strong. There's no miscommunication, because I think one of the things is that the miscommunication has to be one of the fundamental things that break off the cooperation, where one person is saying, this is what I heard, and you are saying, this is what I heard, and there's a clash somewhere. And if we are able to fix that, we definitely will see collaboration between the two.
True that. Mutual respect, really important also, because at some point, this is never to justify any action, you know, by any law enforcement agent.
Yeah.
But you see, if you speak to people with no courtesy, then the trouble is bound to ensue. Mm. Everyone desires respect, more or less, people who spend sleepless nights trying to protect, guard, and keep our society safe. So that's also key. That's quite imperative for people to adhere to. But in the end, if either of the actors does not agree, then there is no way civil-military cooperation can ever work. There has to be an agreement between the two parties for that to work and for us to have a befitting society to coexist in.
Actually, and implementing the solutions would definitely contribute to a more robust civil-military cooperation framework, and would also promote effective security governance and enhance the overall safety and well-being of communities. We want to thank you for being a part of the show this morning. Don't forget, this is Voices of Peace, proudly brought to you by the International Alert Nigeria in partnership with Clean Foundation and funding support from Open Society Foundation. Don't forget, International Alert Nigeria is motivated by the belief that peace is within our power, and you can join the conversation on all alert platforms for updates using the hashtag #IAlertNigeria. And I hope that you had a wonderful day today. From myself, do make sure you stay safe out there, and Merry Christmas in advance. And from Gilbert Joseph,
Merry Christmas to you, Merry Christmas to yours. And for myself, on Sunday, I shall be Abigail.
Where would you be on Sunday?
I shall be in Solomon Lara Amusement Park.
He's already telling you his plans. Can you imagine?
And I'm going to Columbia, Abigail. Even though she has brothers owned me, before all of you, I will make sure I have a splendid Christmas. Please do, regardless of the circumstances, regardless of the situations. Bye now.
Yeah, the news comes up by 10 o'clock. Keep your eyes locked on to J101.9 FM. Good morning.
Thank you for listening to JFM Podcast.